other top stories, the EU foreign policy chief says the Slovenian premier's anti-Iran remarks in a meeting of the MKO terrorist group do not reflect the bloc's stance on ties with Tehran. Afghan officials say security forces have repelled a Taliban assault in the northeastern province of Tahar, inflicting heavy casualties on the militants. And Australia's largest city of Sydney is set to extend COVID-19 lockdown amid a fast-growing outbreak of the Delta virus variant. The European Union's foreign policy chief has expressed regret over comments made by the Slovenian Prime Minister at an anti-Iran meeting of the MKO terrorist group. Josep Borrell said remarks by Janez Janša do not reflect the EU's position on its relations with Iran. Borrell underlined that the Slovenian premier, whose country holds the rotating presidency of the bloc, did not make the remarks in his capacity as the leader of an EU member state. Borrell made the comments in a phone conversation with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. Meanwhile, the Iranian Foreign Ministry summoned the Slovenian ambassador to Tehran and conveyed to him Tehran's strong protest over the issue. Iran has demanded an immediate explanation from the Slovenian government in that regard.
This is the annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group being hosted by Albania. Due to the coronavirus, the meeting is both virtual and face-to-face. Every year, the event brings together delegates paid by the terror group. This year, several high-profile Western politicians, including Slovenian Prime Minister Janez Janša, a number of U.S. lawmakers, as well as former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, are among invitees.
The program of sanctions and pressure employed by the Trump administration needs to remain the model for engagement with Iran if we want to ensure the security of the American people and better lives for the Iranian people. In Washington, D.C., there is much consensus, as evidenced by the overwhelming support for the sanctions regime that we put into place.
Tehran has slammed the Western countries for supporting the group. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the MKO is a terrorist cult having the blood of Iranian people on its hands. Said Khatibzadeh denounced Western politicians, including Pompeo, for, quote, selling themselves to the Europe-hosted circus. He also accused the West of a shameful hypocrisy driven by insatiable thirst for money and anti-Iran obsession. Iran has also summoned Slovenia's ambassador in Tehran to strongly protest against the participation of the country's premier in the meeting. The ministry said supporting a terrorist group violates the UN Charter and international norms. The Mujahideen Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. They also conducted dozens of bombings across the country. Out of the nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the MKO. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, MKO members were armed by the then Iraqi regime to fight alongside Ba'athist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all the crimes committed by the MKO, it's not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US, that often claim to be anti-terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their list of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor by putting a blind eye to how the MKO spilled the blood of innocent people. This exposes the West's double standards when it comes to terrorist organizations.
The Iranian Foreign Minister has, in a message, commemorated the 26th anniversary of the Srebrenica massacre. In the message, Mohammad Javad Zarif expressed his sympathy for the bereaved families of victims and reaffirmed his solidarity with them. He said Iran has stood by the oppressed people of Bosnia and Herzegovina from the outset of the country's independence. Zarif added that Tehran has committed itself to supporting the independence and territorial integrity of Bosnia and Herzegovina and peaceful coexistence among all ethnic groups in the country. Zarif's message was read out by Iran's representative in a ceremony marking the anniversary of the tragic disaster. Bosnian Serb forces systematically killed more than 8,000 Muslim men and boys in 1995 after they captured the eastern town of Srebrenica. Afghan forces have repelled an assault by the Taliban, inflicting heavy casualties on the group in the country's northern province of Tahor. Local officials say 55 Taliban militants were killed and 90 others were wounded, describing the casualties inflicted on the group as unprecedented. Afghanistan's defense ministry, however, has said more than a dozen Taliban fighters were killed in airstrikes by the Afghan Air Force on the outskirts of Taloghan, that is the provincial center of Tahar. Taloghan is the latest provincial capital to come under Taliban pressure. The group has made fresh push to gain more territory in recent weeks. It says it has control over 85% of the Afghan soil. The government, on the other hand, denies the claim as propaganda.
Security situation is deteriorating day by day in Afghanistan due to the rising Taliban attacks, mainly on key cities and districts across the country. In an assault launched on Saturday, most of the suburbs of Ghazni city in southern Afghanistan came under Taliban control.
The attack pushed back Afghan forces into the city as they struggled to avoid the collapse of the strategic area, which is located very close to Kabul-Herat highway.
Officials in Ghazni say Afghan security forces are strongly resisting in the city, noting that dozens of Taliban militants, including foreign nationals, have been killed as a result of counter-attack operations by Afghan security forces.
The enemy has captured some areas in the suburbs of the city. This is because we tactically retreated from those areas. They also made efforts to enter the city, but we pounded them hard and pushed back the terrorists from the city.
This comes as thousands of locals have also stood alongside the Afghan National Security and Defense Forces to resist against the Taliban, a move which has been supported by influential figures and locals in Afghanistan.
Our great nation has always proved to be alongside the country's national security and defense forces. Our people will once again resist against the Taliban now that the militant group wants to expand its military grip.
Apart from consequences like rising violence and bloodshed in Afghanistan, tens of thousands of local Afghans have so far been displaced inside the country. In such circumstances, many have urged both the Afghan government and the Taliban to rather focus on political solutions to resolve their difference than engaging in a deadly conflict. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Yemen's Mine Action Center has defused a large U.S. bomb in the capital, Sana'a. Observers say the operation proves once again that the U.S. is playing a key role in leading the current devastating war on the impoverished nation. A correspondent in Sana'a reports.
After 2 months of digging into a depth of more than 20 meters, Yemen's Mine Action Center managed to defuse one of the largest U.S. bombs dropped in Yemen's capital, Sana'a. The bomb was expected to target the civil defense building in Sana'a.
This GBU-24 bomb from the Paperboy series was dropped in 2015 to target the civilian defense building in Sana'a next to Al Thara Park and Al Hasaba local market. The Saudi-led coalition has been using various types of advanced American weapons in its war on Yemen. This is a clear violation of the international humanitarian law.
Observers say this bomb is another proof of the U.S. military support for the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen.
استخراج قنبلة.
We defused a GBU-24 bomb with a weigh of 1.5 tons. The bomb targeted this hangar designated for the maintenance of Yemeni civil defensive fire trucks. The explosion of the bomb could have caused a humanitarian catastrophe with great consequences. The U.S. has provided only a few countries, including Saudi Arabia, with such a bomb.
Over the past years, Saudi Arabia has used internationally prohibited weapons, including the U.S. bombs, to target residential areas across the country. Back in April 2015, Riyadh committed one unforgettable crime by bombing the Attan area with a U.S. cluster bomb, killing more than 100 civilians, including women and children. This American bomb dropped by U.S. aircraft is yet another witness to Washington's role in the war crimes in Yemen, as the U.N. turns a blind eye to such violations. Besides the military support, Yemenis say Washington has always been backing Saudi Arabia politically as a major ally in the region. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The reduction of fishing areas in the sea of the Gaza Strip has led Gazan fishermen to protest the Israeli restrictions imposed on fishing. Palestinian fishermen can barely make a living due to the inhumane Israeli blockade on fishing areas for 15 years.
Scores of Palestinian fishermen staged a protest against the ongoing Israeli violations against them in the Sea of Gaza. The Israeli siege imposed on the fishing area for 15 years has deteriorated the lives of Gazan fishermen who are dependent on the fishing industry and has badly affected Gaza's economy.
The raw materials required for repairing our nets and boats are not allowed to enter Gaza. This has deteriorated the condition of most fishermen in Gaza. For 15 years, the Israeli regime has intended to close down fishing zones in fishing seasons.
The fishermen syndicate in Gaza organized a protest in Gaza's port. There was also a press conference aimed at highlighting the Israeli abuse against fishermen, namely opening fire at them, arresting them, and droning fishing boats.
I lost my brothers and I lost my money and my source of income as the Israeli regime bombed my boat in 2014. And here I am, participating in this protest while human rights groups turn a blind eye to what is happening to us.
During the latest Israeli offensive on Gaza, Israel closed the sea completely. Since the end of the onslaught on 21st May, Israel has opened the sea for fishermen only for 6 miles, which is not enough for fishermen to get enough fish to help them make money or even provide enough fish for consumers.
The inhumane Israeli blockade has restricted our world for 15 years now. Most of fishermen now lack fishing nets and equipment due to the closure of borders. The Israeli regime is trying to destroy the Palestinian income by any means. The occupiers intend to make us isolated and restrict our daily work.
Under the Oslo Agreement, the fishing range was 20 miles. However, over the years, the Israeli military gradually reduced this range, severely damaging the livelihoods of thousands of fishermen. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is worsening due to the Israeli blockade, which is taking its toll on the life of 2 million Palestinians. Fishermen here in Gaza call on the international community to pressurize Israel to end these restrictions that threaten their daily lives and make it hard to maintain any source of income. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Officials in the Australian city of Sydney are warning against a new wave of COVID-19 infections. Daily cases are predicted to top 100 in Australia's largest city due to the outbreak of the fast-spreading Delta variant. Authorities say lockdown measures could be extended beyond their planned end date of July the 16th. Restrictions in New South Wales are toughened over the weekend. Australia has so far registered over 31,000 infections, 911 deaths. Only 11% of the country's adults have so far been vaccinated against the disease. South African authorities have extended coronavirus restrictions for another 14 days as the new Delta variant spreads in the country. Restrictions include a ban on all gatherings as well as a curfew from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. Restaurants, however, would be able to serve food provided they follow strict health protocols. This is one of the highest levels of coronavirus restrictions in South Africa. The country is in the grip of a third wave of the pandemic. It is also the worst-hit nation on the African continent in terms of recorded deaths and fatalities driven by the Delta variant. Authorities had initially implemented restrictions late in June after the country reported a record of over 26,000 cases. Earlier, we asked editor of Pan-African Newswire Abba Yomi Azakiwe as to why South Africa is seeing a steep rise in coronavirus infections and deaths. Here's what he had to say.
The country is the most industrialized, the most urbanized country on the continent, and that's due to the former apartheid colonial system, which relied heavily on various forms of production, mining, manufacturing. So we have a high concentration of people inside the country. In addition to that, there's been problems with the vaccination rollout. They initially ordered doses from the Serum Institute in India, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccines, and then, of course, as a result of a study that was done, it indicated that the vaccine may not be as effective against the B.1.3.5 variant, which had been predominant in South Africa. Now, with the Delta variant becoming, it appears to be the most predominant there, it is more transmissible, and it is spreading, particularly in Gauteng, which is the province where you have a large concentration in Johannesburg, in Pretoria, and that is the situation right now.
And that's it with international news.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A report entitled "The Hunger Virus Multiplies, Deadly Recipe of Conflict, COVID-19, and Climate Accelerate World Hunger" says that a year and a half into the coronavirus pandemic, deaths from hunger are outpacing those from the virus. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Oxfam Report Shows 11 People Are Dying of Hunger Every Minute, Outpacing COVID Fatalities. Stay tuned for more. As many as 11 people around the world are dying of hunger and malnutrition every minute, outpacing COVID-19 deaths, according to a report published recently by the International Charity of Oxfam. The report entitled "The Hunger Virus Multiplies, a Deadly Recipe of Conflict, COVID-19 and Climate Accelerate World Hunger," says that a year and a half into the coronavirus pandemic, deaths from hunger are outpacing those from the virus. Ongoing conflict, combined with the economic disruptions of the pandemic and an escalating climate crisis, has deepened poverty and catastrophic food insecurity in the world's hunger hotspots and established strongholds in new epicenters of hunger, it states. The report continues, conflict was the single largest driver of hunger since the pandemic began, the primary factor pushing nearly 100 million people in 23 conflict-torn countries to crisis or worse levels of food insecurity. Despite calls for a global ceasefire to allow the world to focus its attention on battling the pandemic, conflict has gone largely unabated. Even as governments had to find massive new resource flows to fight the coronavirus, global military spending rose by 2.7% last year, the equivalent of $51 billion, enough to cover the $7.9 billion 2021 UN Humanitarian Food Security Appeal 6.5 times over. Arms sales spiraled in some of the most conflict-torn countries battered by hunger. For instance, Mali increased its arms purchases by 669% since violence escalated in 2012. Overall, around 155 million people in 55 countries are facing crisis levels of food insecurity or worse, the report states. Some of the nations hardest hit by hunger, including Ethiopia, Madagascar, South Sudan, and Yemen. More than 500,000 people in these countries are facing famine-like conditions, an increase of 500% since the pandemic began. The climate emergency was the third significant driver of global hunger this year, the report states. Nearly 400 weather-related disasters, including record-breaking storms and flooding, continued to intensify for millions across Central America, Southeast Asia, and the Horn of Africa, where communities were already battered by the effects of conflict and COVID-19-related poverty. Meanwhile, the rich continued to get richer during the pandemic. The paper notes, the wealth of the 10 richest people, none of whom are men, increased by $413 billion last year, enough to cover the entire UN humanitarian appeal for 2021, more than 11 times over. The report is referring to the World Body's December 2020 appeal for $35 billion to meet humanitarian needs around the world in 2021. Oxfam Executive Director Gabriela Butcher said in a statement that informal workers, women, displaced people, and other marginalized groups are hit hardest by conflict and hunger. Women and girls are especially affected too, often eating last and eating least. They face impossible choices like having to choose between traveling to the market and risking getting physically or sexually assaulted or watching their families go hungry. Governments must stop conflict from continuing to fuel catastrophic hunger and instead ensure aid agencies reach those in need, Butcher continued. Donor governments must immediately and fully fund the UN's humanitarian appeal to help save lives now. Security Council members must also hold to account all those who use hunger as a weapon of war. To prevent unnecessary death and millions more people being pushed to extreme poverty and hunger, governments must stop this deadly disease. A people's vaccine has never been more urgent, she added. They must simultaneously build fairer and more sustainable food systems and support social protection programs.
food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and our heartfelt condolences to you all on the sad martyrdom anniversary of the Prophet's ninth infallible successor, Imam Muhammad al-Taghi al-Jawad, peace be upon him, whose life was cut short in the prime of youth. We now present you a saying from this repository of divine wisdom. To show a matter before preparing for it properly is spoiling it.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone, whoever's listening to us. Welcome to another program of Islamic upbringing. We have in our studio with us Brother Miqdad talking about signs of confidence and lack of confidence. Welcome, Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for being here.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you to you.
So we talked about signs of confidence in children. So are we still talking about signs, or do we have more to talk about today?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. No, I think we're ready to start discussing the ways to help children with confidence. Before I go on, let me mention this point that as we talked about the signs, and I think as Brother Mahdi mentioned it quite clearly as well, we don't want to... I don't want to come over here and say, okay, here's, we're going to categorize children, basically, the children with confidence and the children without confidence, basically. You don't want to label children, especially because they're children. At that age, you don't have such a great lack of confidence or such a great confidence, basically. It's a long spectrum. Okay?
Right, okay.
And the worst thing that parents would do, and I want to put a lot of emphasis, you can bold this or...
quote unquote.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That you don't want to label children and say, oh, by the way, my child doesn't have any confidence in him, or my child has a lot of self-confidence in him.
Yeah, that's horrific. Actually, parents actually do that these days. They actually say that in front of the children. No,
exactly. We don't want to do that. Neither should we say it, nor should we even think
even
it.
Even think it. Okay.
Children shouldn't be categorized or labeled or put into boxes, basically, that, oh, my child is like this and my child is part of this category of children. No. Children grow, children change, children learn new things, children adapt, children are part of a journey, and they will gain or lose different things depending on how the tarbiyat happens. And so we don't want to say right now that, oh, let me see all these signs again and tick boxes for our children. So, okay, he has this one, he has this one, he has that one, and that's it. That's my child's lack of confidence children.
Right, so you might actually misanalyze your child learning. Yeah.
Exactly. Those signs were there just to give us a rough idea of what we're looking at, basically. And through that, we also understood the value of confidence as well, how important it is. And so is it what we want to achieve, basically. However, we don't want here to label children. And therefore, so when we talk about how to instill confidence, this is not a show for children who don't have any confidence. So don't think that, oh, my child has confidence, I can now switch off. That's not the case.
Right.
We're not talking about children who have confidence or who don't have confidence. Rather, we're talking about a general principle of upbringing and applies to everybody, applies to all parents. And we should be working on these. If you're doing it, then alhamdulillah, well and good. Keep at it and Allah help you. And if you're not, then this is the time to start implementing some of these things. Inshallah, that will be useful for you as well. So this is...
So now it's not specified about children who are not confident. And the points that we're mentioning might actually help children who are confident, and there are certain things that might need improvement. Like everyone needs improvement.
Definitely.
So we'll return after a short break. Please stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Islamic upbringing, and we're talking about children, their lack of confidence, and how to improve that, and also generally how to aim for a perfect and Islamic upbringing. So, Brother Miqdar, we mentioned the signs, and now we're talking about how to be more practical and improve what's there. And, you know, get rid of what's not supposed to be there.
Right, so the first point I'd like to mention, when we talked about it many times previously in the previous shows, we can reiterate over here and then move on, inshallah, to other ones as well, is respect, respecting children. One of the very important things that as parents, but also as any individual working with children, is to deal with children in a very respectful way. This applies to how we speak to children, or how we handle children, how we actually interact with children. It should be done in a very respectful way. The examples, you can refer to the previous show as well, the examples in the hadith that we have in the verse of the Quran, in the life of the Prophet and the Ahl al-Bayt is numerous. It's too many, basically, where you realize how these individuals would speak to their children or to other people's children in a very respectful way. And we've been taught, and we've been told as well, and instructed that when you deal with children, deal with them with a lot of ikram, with a lot of respect.
Okay.
And give them worth, give them a sense of importance, give them an important place, make them feel that they have value and worth, basically.
Which they actually do.
Definitely, of course. It shouldn't be. We're not faking it, obviously.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in our book, Children in the Quran and Sunnah, by Ayatollah al-Rayshari. So hadith number 279, for instance, where he mentions that the Prophet says that akrimu awladakum, respect and value and honor your children. And you also find in the way that the Prophet would interact, for example, in other riwayat, we have the Prophet would say salam to children before they would say. He would pass by the streets and would see children playing. He would stop, interact with them, give them a sense of importance. You have, again, narrations reported to us about how the Ahlul Bayt would accept the invitation of children, for example, to partake in a meal, would actually, the way they would hold children, they would play with children, different scenarios and circumstances whereby we realize that this is extremely important. It's the way we deal with children, the way we talk to them, the way we interact with them, is to give them a lot of importance, a lot of value.
Oh yeah, the most important existence besides the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the Prophet, peace be upon him. Yeah. And he himself is giving them such immense importance and respect to children. That does give us an idea of how important it is for us to respect children, and because they are the reality and the future of the world itself. So yeah, we'll carry on talking about the practical aspects of upbringing, and please stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're talking about the practical aspects of Islamic upbringing, and Brother Miqdad was mentioning and telling us about respect in children.
So this is very different to how some people would treat children, for example, ignoring them, putting them aside, don't come over here, for example. You find children that want to, for example, partake in Nawazul, for example, in Salatul Jama'ah. They want to pray together with others. Showing respect is to find a way to accommodate them into the lines of the jama'ah, so they don't feel
left out.
Basically, the worst case scenario is to throw them out of the mosque and say, well, children should play outside and you're not allowed in the mosque. Basically, this is actually a very disrespectful way. Basically, it's actually telling them, no, you're not important enough. The mosque is not
un-Islamic, isn't it?
It's not a very nice thing to do. Definitely. Dealing with children with respect now. How linking to our conversation of self-confidence, the key, you see, what happens is that children realize their own worth by understanding how others deal with them, especially their parents. So when parents give a lot of respect to their children, children actually realize that, okay, if my parents are giving me respect, that means I must have something valuable and worth it.
Right.
And this is where the journey of self-worth and self-esteem starts. They actually believe that, yes, I've grown up and across 10 years, 15 years, I've seen my parents give me a lot of respect, show me a lot of respect, talk to me in a way that showed value, allowed me to take decisions, or really gave worth and value to what I thought, what I said, what I liked, etc. And this actually makes a child realize that actually I am worth it. I have a place. Yeah. And they realize through what their parents, how their parents dealt with them, that they are actually of value. Of value for themselves, for the society, for generations.
Which is why one unsuitable incident does not put them down, because they've had those 10 years of backup with them from your parents.
Exactly. So this is crucial, is how parents deal with their children. They should be full of respect, full of importance, full of ikram, as the tradition says.
So it does happen. And there's one thing that we do notice is how children are treating other children. Right, so if they've been treated in a rough manner or a disrespectful manner, which is why it comes back to the things that you said in the previous episodes, that they are humble and they treat others with respect, because they probably saw that respect given to them from their parents, and that's how they've been grown up.
Definitely, that's a very good point. So children who actually were shown respect will actually then give respect as well, will show respect as well.
Yeah, that's how they learn.
That's how they learn. And not just to their own parents as well, again, but also to others, as you mentioned, to other children, to other their peers, basically, because they've seen how they've been dealt with. They've been dealt with a lot of importance. They've been dealt with a lot of respect. They're more likely to then give that respect back to others as well. Both from an aspect of because they've got this worth and this self-confidence in themselves, but also because this is how they've learn to deal with others.
That's just the way to speak to someone for
exactly.
these people. You know,
exactly.
That's the sole mean of communication for them now. And anything other than that is just abnormal for these people, for these children who've been treated right. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we will carry on, Brother Miqdad, with the more practical aspects of Islamic upbringing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you to you.
Please, dear listeners, send us your suggestions. And by the way, I got reminded now when the brother mentioned the book. We are talking about the Islamic upbringing from the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Reh Shahri. So if you want any references, you can go and refer to the book. Yeah, so if you've got any suggestions, comments, and anything that you want to convey to us, please note down our email, englishradio@irib.ir. You can also visit our website in case you've lost out on the previous episodes, parstoday.com, parstoday.com. Now that's our website and email, and if you want to join us and stay in touch on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram, please search Call of Islam Radio. Please allow us to leave until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The light.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history. A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a 4-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26, so we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says only there is over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter-high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sandcastle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sand castle in Germany. An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
A French company has taken the process of pizza making to a whole new level by creating a robot chef. The robot named Patsy is completely autonomous. The machine, now working in a pizzeria in Paris, is capable of taking orders, making a pizza from scratch and serving it. Having three arms, the robot can make 120 pizzas in an hour, which is 13 times faster than a human chef.
We are in a very fast process with a perfect control of time and quality, since we have a constancy offered by robotics and then an environment that is quite cool and relaxed. The idea is also to spend a few pleasant minutes washing the robot while you wait for your pizza to be made.
It took designers 8 years to develop the machine, which is claimed to be the first pizza-making robot in the world. They hope to use the technology to open robotics-run restaurants that can function round the clock. In China, scientists are happy that the world's first artificially bred leaf monkey is doing well 2.5 months after being born. The rare monkey was born at a research and protection center in Wuzhou City in April. Its birth took place several days earlier than the due date, and the baby was relatively weak at birth. However, thanks to its parents and caretakers, it has grown in a normal way. Scientists say the baby monkey is now in a good condition and its behavior is totally normal.
It is very important in terms of the cytic value. It has been growing up normally. In addition, we have found that it has a curiosity about the world and always shows some exploratory and learning behaviors. In general, it is in very good physical condition.
The center's scientists say another leaf monkey that was born in April is doing well too. These monkeys are the 8th generation of leaf monkeys that have been bred in captivity. Their successful births have raised hope amongst the scientists of saving a species that is one of China's most endangered wild animals. Imagine the hungriest you've ever been. How many hot dogs could you possibly gobble down in 10 minutes? An American man has done 76. Professional eater Joey Chestnut broke the world record in the international hot dog eating contest on Brooklyn's Coney Island. The 37-year-old managed to devour the first 30 hot dogs in only 3 minutes. The impressive win marked his 14th victory at the annual contest. He held the previous record, which was only one sausage sandwich, less than his 2021 record. Astronauts at China's space station have successfully carried out the country's first spacewalk. Two astronauts exited the core module of Tiangong to examine the station's robotic arm. They also elevated a panoramic camera and tested new generation spacesuits. The mission lasted 7 hours. According to the China Manned Space Agency, another spacewalk will be conducted soon. In June, three Chinese astronauts blasted off to become the first crew of the Tiangong station. They will remain there for 3 months. Lionel Messi is one of the most popular football players with millions of fans from across the world, but the legendary player enjoys special love and affection in his hometown. Local artists at Rosario relished the chance to honor Messi in a mural on a four-story building. The 14-meter high and 8-meter wide giant artwork stands opposite of the school Messi attended in his childhood. The mural depicts him as both an adult and a child. Messi had been the top scorer in European football leagues multiple times. He also received the World's Best Player Award for a record 6 times. The 34-year-old currently holds the Argentinian national team's captaincy. Pangolins might look tough with their scaly armor, but they are in fact highly vulnerable animals. A Vietnamese man is dedicating his time and energy to making sure they are safe. 39-year-old Thai has been protecting pangolins since his boyhood when he saw one brutally hunted by his neighbors. The bitter experience inspired him to find or make a group devoted to saving the endangered species. Save Vietnam's Wildlife has over 60 staff and has so far rescued around 1,600 pangolins. Thai says seeing the rescued animals return to nature is the best part of his job.
The most wonderful moments in the lives of all of the conservationists at my center are the moments that we witness the rescued pangolins getting out from the transportation cages and slowly walking into the forest, because the forest is their true home, where they can have the joy of living their lives in their own way.
Pangolins are one of the most trafficked mammals in the world. Their number have fallen due to illegal trade. The animals, now critically endangered, could once be found in the rainforests across Asia and Africa. They use their sticky tongues to hunt for ants, termites, and similar prey. People around the world have their unique ways of celebrating events. In Nepal, farmers and locals celebrate National Paddy Day by jumping into muddy fields. The festival marks the start of the annual rice planting season. People joyfully sing and play in muddy water. Another popular tradition on this day is eating a mixture of curd and beaten rice with friends and family. The fun event usually draws many tourists from around the world. However, this year, it is limited only to locals due to the coronavirus pandemic. Rice is the most important crop in Nepal and accounts for almost half of the cereal production in the country. The pandemic has not stopped this British musician from holding live concerts. His audience is a very special group in Danish rural areas. Jacob Shaw, a university professor, is the man behind this experiment. He says playing for the animals has been his second best option after the pandemic forced the cancellation of many events and social gatherings. Shaw says the performance for the cows has been so rewarding that he wants to continue it even after public spaces are reopened. He says the cows seem to enjoy classical music very much.
They react differently to different pieces. We played something that was slightly more upbeat, a little bit more modern, and a lot of them didn't like it and they went away. And I think that the type of pieces which is closer to their voice, closer to their mooing, which could be similar actually to a cello, which is why it's so successful with them, they prefer that.
The cello player is sometimes accompanied by other musicians. They say the experience has helped them practice and also relieve some of the stress of a live concert.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Science fiction has turned into reality, or at least that's how the developer of Aircar describes his vehicle when it transforms from a car into an aircraft in less than 3 minutes. This prototype flying car was designed and created by Slovakian transportation professor Stefan Klein. He says that his design opens a new category in transportation. The dual-mode vehicle composed a 35-minute flight in this week between the two Slovakian airports. So far, it has completed more than 40 hours of test flight. Aircar can fly about 1,000 kilometers at a height of over 2,500 meters. That makes the dream of those who wish to ride above traffic closer to reality. A digital art museum in the Japanese capital has unveiled a stunning exhibition offering visitors an intimate interaction with nature. One of the attractions of the show is Floating Flower Garden, which is a mirrored room filled with 13,000 orchid flowers. The orchids are dangling from the ceiling and move up once a visitor walks through in the space and approaches the flowers. Once the visitors move past, the flowers descend again. This makes the visitors able to freely wander around the three-dimensional flower mass space. Tokyo-based digital art group Team Lab that runs this exhibition says the artwork is designed to help people think that they are part of the garden.
This is an installation filled with these flowers. As you walk towards them, the flowers slowly move up to create an area of space for you. Surrounded so completely by flowers, you feel immersed in the flowers, the garden itself.
There are several other installations in this exhibition. One is an outdoor piece filled with Ovid sculptures that light up after the sun sets. Visitors can see 61 different colors of light in this section. When one of the Ovids tipped over by a hand or the wind, it emits a sound. The sound is then echoed by the surrounding Ovids.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.